Welcome to Special Sauce, Serious Eats podcast about food and life. Every week on Special Sauce, we talk to some of the leading lights of American culture, food folks and non-food folks alike.
We'll tell all the people who liked our cakes that they're available in cupcake form, so they'll come in for a bite, but then they'll order sandwiches and all that stuff. Didn't think that was the thing that's going to take off, and suddenly it explodes.
We didn't like cupcakes, and we decided to market it as competition between me and her, and you know, we made these things called battle boxes.
God,
and
this
had,
takes me back.
They had
this
like one flavor each of us would make, and then we'd have the community vote. So we did this for a couple weeks till people are like, we really don't want to vote anymore. Can we just have the cupcakes?
Today in the house, it is my distinct pleasure to welcome some of Serious Eats' oldest friends. Food provocateurs and activists, cupcake mavens, cookbook authors, general pains in the ass. Intentionally so, I might add.
I'm just so good at it. It's in my blood.
Allison and Matt Robicelli. They are the founders of Robicelli Studios in Baltimore, Maryland, which as far as I could tell means they'll do anything you want them to do.
Well, if you need us to do something, I'll get it done.
All right. There you go.
I'm a song and dance man. Hey, kid.
So welcome to Special Sauce, both of you. It's a pleasure to have you here. Allison, tell us about life at your family table growing up.
We just did a podcast episode about this, 2 weeks ago?
It was very simple.
Oh, yeah. First of all, we should say that Allison and Matt have their own podcast, which is called...
The Robicelli Argument Clinic.
And, it's pretty much... it's Allison and I and our two other stars of... we have a 19-year-old kid from Southwest Baltimore who is on the show. Yeah, well, he's the Urkel.
Yeah.
And then we also have Eben, who's our producer, and a cat who likes to delete stuff periodically.
Like, we always call Noah our Fonz, or like our Urkel. Like, we have that wacky neighbor boy who's 19 and he's two blocks away, and he comes over on his skateboard in the morning and he hangs out all day. Then he goes to school, then he comes back, and then he leaves at 11 o'clock at night.
I love it.
I don't even remember how he started coming to our house, but he's our sidekick, and we're guesting on another podcast, pardon me. And You should know better about talking on top of each other by this point. We've been doing this for like 10 episodes. But we just quibble a lot. And we argue. We've been together for 14 years. And someone's like, that's entertaining. Cut to tape. And that was it. So we decided to do a podcast of just, we have these ridiculous arguments. Just any kind of food topic. We just want to have more fun.
I like an argument-based podcast.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I'm wasting all this material on stuff I could be sharing with everybody when we have these stupid fights in the car sometimes.
So many stupid fights. Remember that time you started shaving in the car for no good reason? You took a razor out of the glove compartment and started shaving yourself.
I don't remember that.
Oh, I remember that. I remember that because Dave Martin was in the back seat, and we were on like Roosevelt Island. And I was like, why are you shaving?
No, there was a razor in the glove compartment, and then I started to shave just because it was funny.
No, you didn't shave because you were funny. You saw why there was a razor in the glove compartment. We will never know. And you just started shaving.
Wait, are we talking like an electric razor?
No, it was like a regular, big razor.
It was like a cheap one, too. Like a 99-cent store, no brand razor, totally dry shaving. I think you were shaving your lips. I have so many questions, and I've never pursued them. That happened like
right,
6 years ago. I was like, I'm done.
We need to leave that aside. First, tell us about life at your family table, Allison.
The family table, what's funny... which we had figured out on the podcast, was like, we all have these ideas at the family table. Like, when we discuss it, you're always expecting these warm stories and your grandma coming out and feeding you. And I think a lot of us kind of conflated it with some Norman Rockwell paintings, because when you sit down and you really think about the family table, I remember a lot of yelling. I remember putting a TV there because that would shut everybody up.
This was where you grew up.
Yeah, where I grew up. And, you know, you put the rose-colored glasses on and, you know, because you only want to remember the kind of good things. But then when you get really granular and you remember, like, there was a lot of stress. And I realize this now because we have two boys who are just about 11 to 12, and they are so super picky, like the pickiest eaters I've ever met. But they're also picky for opposite things. So Toby loves cheese. Atticus won't touch it. Atticus likes meat. Toby won't touch it. They both like different vegetables. They drive me insane. I was actually fighting with my son over text on the subway over here. I was like, listen, think about the one thing that you love most in the world. And then think about that teacher you have that tells you all your work is garbage. So this is how I feel every night. And he's out of town the other night. And I was like, listen, I'm ordering in because I'm going to cook and neither of them are going to eat it. And I'm going to throw it in the garbage and I'm going to be sad. And
oh, by the way, did you take the garbage out Tuesday?
Yes, I did. Awesome. Recycling goes out tonight, right?
So wait, yes. So what did your, was your mother a good cook?
My mom's a great cook.
Oh, she was a good cook. She was a great
yeah.
cook.
Yeah. She was a great cook.
This was in Brooklyn?
In Brooklyn. My grandmother, I probably remember her as a better cook than she was. She was a child of the Depression, a child of Sicilian immigrants, you know, working class. My family never had a lot of money. And you got to feed like 20 people on a Sunday after church with like 17 bucks. And somehow you make it happen.
So we make some Sunday gravy and a hell of a lot of pasta.
Yep, yep. Kind of crazy, like when we moved to Baltimore and everybody's like obsessed with crabs there for some reason. When I ate crabs growing up, I'd only put them in tomato sauce because right. you could take four crabs and feed 30 people right. on a pot of sauce. So yeah, I don't understand the attachment to like little things. I'm like, you're wasting so much of the animal. You need the shells. You need the, I just wrote something for Taste about using leek greens because I hate throwing out food. I just hate it. I'm like, I don't have all this money. I'm a food writer.
But you
I
had,
get paid maybe.
But you, exactly. But you had fond memories, would you say, overall? Mixed.
Some days, yes. Some days, no.
Got
I mean,
it.
I kind of love the fact that food isn't always a constant.
Got
food
it.
Can bring up all the memories. It can bring up all the feelings. It's complicated just like we are.
Yeah.
And I think that's the kind of beauty about it. Like, I mean, we can't look at it through rose-colored glasses. There's moments where, I mean, we eat just because we're sad or we eat because, like, we're just looking for something to do with our hands. It's such a complicated thing. And that doesn't necessarily make it a bad thing. You
yeah.
know, I don't want people to feel... You know, there's all these beautiful stories on the internet about the family table, and not everybody had it. And you know what? That's okay. If your family dinner was eating McDonald's in the car alone, that's fine. It's
I
your
used
thing.
To say, you know, I was one of four boys, and my family, the din was incredible,
uh-huh.
right? Because there were six of us.
Jesus.
And it was like
wait,
it was
four boys?
Yeah, it was like
God help you.
It was like Speaker's Corner at Hyde Park.
Mm.
You know, like and you had to sing for your supper about some obscure leftist political thing that was going on because my parents were we were all red diaper babies and my parents were both communists. I just wrote a memoir, so this is all very fresh.
Fresh comps.
Yeah, exactly.
By but,
so what about you, Matt? What was life at the Robicelli family table?
Well, my dad was on the road a lot, so he really wasn't home. So it was pretty much my brother and I and my mom.
He was a singer.
My dad was a singer.
A singer? Like a lounge singer?
No, like an opera singer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and a musical theater and stuff.
And did a lot of traveling.
So he was legit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He, you know, he's the one claim to fame that his college accepts. They've produced nothing but my father, in which I'm like, you know, good job, guys. Aim low.
Yeah.
So my mom was very interested in the crock pot.
Uh-huh.
Well, his mom also, she was raising two boys essentially on her own and going to night school to get her master's degree in nursing and working full time.
Oh, were you there? No.
No, because
so anyway.
I've been with you 14 years. I've heard the story a lot.
All right. Well, you're going to shut your mouth because I let you speak.
I'm telling the story better than you. Try harder.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, you know, so my mom would always, you know, it was always the same thing. It was always some sort of either Midwestern casserole or it was her magic recipe of the flaccid chicken in the crock pot, sometimes still in the original bag.
With the chicken that was uncooked, with the skin that was uncooked.
Oh my God. Where
you
it's not
some,
crispy.
Like,
it's
French a, onion soup packet on
no,
there?
No, she didn't do that. My mom was also really into healthy food.
Uh-huh.
For
me and my brother.
Cottage cheese.
Like, you know, I was thinking back to the other day. I was like, mom used a lot of nutritional yeast. God, how expensive was that in the 80s, and where did she find that?
Your mom was the hipster of your
nutritional yeast. I was like, now I picture her in some black market trying to purchase nutritional yeast in the back alley of, like,
Mott
Street.
There was that and wheat germ. Remember,
yeah,
wheat germ
was another
everything.
One. We used to eat a lot of that.
Really?
But my mom would make that for my brother and I, but then she'd double fist brownies in the kitchen.
I mean, she had two boys.
You know, we talked about this on our podcast, but we
just keep mentioning that we talked about this already, and Ed wasn't there, and Ed didn't listen to the episode.
No,
so.
That's how you start a segue in radio, sweetheart.
Oh, okay.
But
the name of the podcast is, of course,
the Robicelli Argument Clinic. You
Wait
got
a
it
minute.
Wrong.
Everybody should know that by now.
By now, it's been 10 weeks.
In this case, 10 minutes.
Yes.
It's been 10 minutes, and started episode 4.
Yeah.
You can go back to the earlier episodes once you've committed to us.
Yeah.
But yeah, my mom, I feel that she just, you know, guilt ate brownies. She used to make, but she did make, she used the same cookbook. It was always this, she could bake. She couldn't cook. So we our casseroles were either ground beef mixed with French green beans, cream of soup mix, and then Grand's biscuits or Bisquick on top of the thing, and she'd bake it.
Yeah, Matt's family, we both grew up in Brooklyn. My family on, my mother was Norwegian, and my father was Sicilian for Bensonhurst. And when you have Sicilian people, your family just takes over everything else, like a
right.
cancer. So I grew up with a lot of Italian food, but my mom was always experimenting with stuff she saw in Food and Wine, a little bit more internet. And I grew up in a block where everybody spoke different languages. So I grew up with all these cuisines, like my best friend's first generation Chinese. And I'd go to his house and, his mom is like my mom. And, you know, you get to grow up with all these things. They're like Min's parents and Sarah's parents who would give us, you know, their grandmothers couldn't speak English, but they could feed you kimchi. And you kind of got that.
Yeah.
Matt's family
is
from the Midwest.
On my dad's side, we're white. And then on my mother's side, we're South Baptist white.
Yeah, his family, he moved from...
Two shades of white.
Two shades
of white. It's like eggshell and white.
But they came from the Midwest, and I was not familiar with Midwest cooking growing up. Like, I could eat stuff from Jamaica. I could eat stuff from Kazakhstan. That's normal to me.
But you couldn't eat hot dish.
No idea what that was.
No, and, well, we call them casseroles in Iowa. They call them hot dishes in Minnesota. But my favorite thing was every time I'd watch my mom make a casserole, it was like the pre-version of what we have now as Chopped. And it was like, I'm like, Mom, what are you going to do with this? Pickle? Two potatoes and a package of hot dogs.
You make it work. You make
That's
it work.
Awesome.
And I will give you the recipe later, but it is one of the greatest dishes you'll ever eat.
That's how it all comes out. Like that leek dish I bought, I just wrote about, it's, you know, you go into the fridge and you're like, what do I have?
Right.
And when I first started in the business in like 2002, most of my job was family meal. Like, you know, and everybody liked to eat well. And I love that. I love going into the kitchen and be like, okay, so I have... what's going bad? What can I do with this? And it wasn't necessarily like finding a recipe or like, you know, working things in like, well, I'll substitute this or that. You're like, this is what I have.
Yeah.
So let me be creative. And I mean, we do dishes that I guess they don't even really have a pedigree. Like you can't say it's a soup or a casserole or this or that. It's just its own thing.
You can't tell if it's a soup or a casserole.
You don't know.
That's a pretty big line.
Like remember that the rice thing I made.
It's farm to table Robicelli.
Yeah. It's like you sit there, like the leek thing I made is like a risotto, but then 10 minutes later, kind of like a pie. Depends on, you know, because, and then if it was like earlier, it would have been a soup. Rice sucks shit up. It just sucks
up. That's true.
So you took your diva self, Allison, to BU's Dramatic Arts Conservatory, right?
Yes, it did.
And all was hunky-dory until something happened 5 days before your 21st birthday.
I got cancer. It was great. It was 5 days before my 21st birthday. I remember it vividly. It was a Friday, and I knew that I had been – something was wrong with me for a while, and I had kept going to all these doctors, and I just felt lousy, and I was getting night sweats, and cancer didn't really pop into my mind. But it was really aggravating, like, not knowing what I had. And then when they told me what I had, I was like, huh. I'm like, okay. They were like, you're taking this really well. I'm like, well, when you know what it is, you could do something. And, like, I've probably been dying for over a year.
But it was, like, stage 4.
Stage 4. I had, like, my birthday is August 1st, and they said maybe till Christmas I had.
Wow.
It had spread to my bone marrow. It was all over me. But I responded.
Ayo.
I got real up close with that shit.
Kind of boyfriend you don't want.
The cancerous one?
Yeah, the one that's cancer.
The one that's cancer. I started chemo in October, and it was terrible. I thought I was going to get, like, super skinny, but I blew up like a balloon because of prednisone. I went completely bald, but still had to shave my legs, which is such bullshit.
Shave your legs.
Well, I'm married now. I don't have to, you know. But back then, I would occasionally try.
Yeah, that's an you never tried.
No, I met you. We moved in together in like 3 weeks. No, no, no. And then
I'm going to put this
I had your furniture. Where were you going?
Good. Shush. I was going to put this to bed right now. She'll go, "Ah, crap. I got to wear a skirt. Got to shave my legs now."
No. I bought jumpsuits. Never again. No more skirts.
Yeah. Now she looks like a 1980s fly dancer.
And you love that.
Sometimes.
You love that. I don't want to go places I have to dress up.
All right. So.
Anyway, cans are terrible. Don't get it if you can. If you can avoid it, just sidestep the whole cancer thing.
That's not big news, yeah. I don't think. But it must have been, I mean, you were 21 years old. How horrible must that have been, you know? And obviously you made it through, but when people were telling you that you weren't going to.
It really messes up your entire perception of everything. Like, all my friends are starting senior year at college. I am not, you know.
Yeah.
I am still trying to figure out what I want to do with my life. And now I'm like, that might not happen.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird. Like, when you are that close to death, I had this peace come over me just randomly. Like, I just had this crazy peace come over me one night. And it was like this kind of understanding, like, if I lived or if I died, I was still going to be okay. It's so supernatural and bizarre, and there's no way to explain this unless you've been through it. And if you've mentioned this to someone who's been through it, they get it immediately. And I was like, okay. I'm like, we're going to do this. Like, there's nothing – people would say, like, oh, you're so brave. No, I'm not brave. Like, I didn't go to the cancer store and be like, give me the cancer so no one else could get it. Like, no, I got a shitty hand.
And did you have chemo and the whole bit?
Yeah. I had a chemo port put in my chest. And I had a catheter in my heart. I had bone marrow biopsies, which back then you didn't get anesthesia for, which was great. And my bones were all hard because I was young and supple.
Yeah.
And spinal tap. I still get phantom pains from the spinal tap years later. But, you know, you just realize you just got to do it. That's just freaking life.
Yeah.
And you got to be who you are and just keep fighting and make lots of jokes. Because if you don't laugh, everything will kill you in the world. Everything.
But, Matt, you also dealt with your own intense life experiences at a very young age, right? You were a fire department paramedic.
I was a paramedic. 9/11, so I got hurt on that day.
You were at ground zero on 9/11,
yes.
Right? Tell us exactly what happened, because it's not a fun story.
No, it's not really a great story to tell.
I'll hold you tonight. I'll hold you. I love you.
It's not a good time.
What is not a good time?
No. I don't know. But, you know, it was a really shitty day. I mean, everyone knows that. But, you know, going, you know, being down there and working and, you know, because I got hurt later in the day when World Trade 7 was coming down and we were just doing, you know, looking for people at that point and looking for patients. Because at the point when World Trade 7 was coming down, it was just never, there was nothing else.
Right.
I mean, I don't understand why the mayor kept oil drums on the 13th floor of a building that was on fire for OEM.
And how are you going to get them out that quick? If you have all these oil drums, you're not like, go get the hand
truck. I don't think anybody was in the building at that point.
Everything had evacuated.
Everything was gone. But, I mean, it was just, we were looking for people. And because at that point, a lot of the aid stations that were set up were just, they're really just mostly people with stuff in their eyes and, you know, smoke inhalation and, and, you know, because most of the people that were really there were you know, dead. So when that building came down and started, you know, we all ran again for our lives, and it got pretty intense. I kind of look at it as it was like a video game, but you're there. I mean, I wasn't important at that point. Other people were more important than I was.
Well, whether you were important or not doesn't really address confronting that reality at that moment, which must have been so intense.
Well, he was 20, you know?
Yeah, you were 20.
I was only 20. I wasn't even 21 yet.
And I think one of the reasons we got along so well is, like, because after I survived cancer, it's really hard to relate to somebody who's 22 and didn't go through that.
Right.
And at the time, I was told that I was most likely infertile and that I was going to develop leukemia in my early 30s, so I would likely be on borrowed time. The chemo that they had given me, I responded miraculously to it, but they did not know a lot about the side effects or the long-term prognosis.
Yeah, and in your case...
Now she's got this elephant tail.
Yeah.
And under the hair are those ears are actually prosthetics. Her real ears fell off. She actually has seal ears.
I actually had I have them in my wallet if you want to look at them later.
But you also, look at what's going on with Jon Stewart now trying to get the compensation funds.
Good luck.
People are dealing with this now 18 years later, and you don't even know what you're going to be confronting.
Well, I do.
She does. It's been pretty shitty the last couple of years.
Well, when we met each other, I was really upfront. I was like, listen, I can't have children. I might not live more than 10 years. He was also in a bad place. He's like, we don't know. And we just got,
pretty much thought we both were going to die way before now.
Yeah.
And
we just didn't know.
We're just riding it out.
Both understood that kind of crazy existential level of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And the idea of when you're 24 when we met, you're promising somebody the rest of your life. That's insane. You're 24 and you can't picture you being 80 and changing each other, or the fact that one of you is going to watch the other die. I mean, there's a lot of the better for worse part. The better part is so good, but there's a lot of worse. Our marriage and every marriage is a job. It is your full-time job, and we work at it.
Yeah.
And with him, he's always had these health issues. He's had all sorts of random stuff, and we didn't know what it was, and he wasn't down there that long, so we didn't know it was going to happen. And a couple of years ago, when he randomly got super sick and went into organ failure, and doctors still couldn't figure it out, and we found out that guys down there on that day, suddenly, 10 years later, autoimmune diseases started spiking.
Wow.
They don't know why.
That was great, though. So I finally started going to...
there's so many doctors.
What are they called?
Immunologists?
No.
Rheumatologists?
Rheumatologists. There we go. Yes. I see so many doctors now.
I think we got 14 now, 15? Yeah.
Her name's Kathy. Yeah. I don't call her by her job description.
We're so familiar with these people at this point.
Everyone knows her as Kathy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. she's a great rheumatologist for Johns Hopkins. And
but it's the uncertainty of life. We've always known this. There's no answers to this. I mean, we still don't know what he has. It wasn't until he got sick in the hospital right before when we were going to move the bakery to Baltimore. And he first had what we thought was a chest cold. Turns out he had something called pericarditis, which is where...
there's an inflammation, right?
Yeah, there's a sac around your heart that protects it. And his got inflamed and started filling up with fluid, which got infected. That spread to his lungs. We didn't even think when he went in, because I remember you had pissed me off so bad. And I was like, just go to the fucking hospital, really, so I couldn't see you. And then he calls me. He's like, I'm in the cardiac ICU. And I was like, what the hell happened?
Jesus.
And this is actually kind of a funny story. Because, I still feel like we're really nobodies. When anybody, recognizes me or says, oh, how's it feel to be whatever? And I was like, listen, my life is
I'm going to tell this part.
Yeah, this is a good one.
I'm sitting on the table. They're going to give me an angiogram to make sure. He's like, I want to see you, make sure there's no blockage, see what's going on, make sure you're not having a heart attack.
And that's where they take...
So they take a tube, they stick it in your groin, they shove it up into your heart and whatever, blah, blah, blah.
All the way through.
So, they have to shave you for this procedure. But they were going to do it.
And you said, I happen to have a razor in my car. Yes. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
I had it in my pocket.
Okay.
So this guy goes, he's shaving me. And then he looks up. He goes, hey, you're Matt Rubicelli. I was like, yeah. He goes, my wife loves going to your bakery all the time. And I'm like, great. Now you can explain what my junk looks like to her now.
I mean, that just made the whole experience to me. It was like, yeah, I was scared, but that happened.
But the best part was...
I held on to that.
So they can go through your groin or your wrist. And he didn't check my wrist yet. And then he checks my wrist and goes, oh, we're just going to go through the wrist. And it was like...
You shaved you for nothing.
I was like,
just for that moment.
That's what I see how the medical fields work now.
I was hysterical, and Matt's like, this isn't funny. I'm like, it's totally funny, and you're going to laugh about this one day when we're on a podcast.
So how did everything lead to the bakery and cupcakes and you guys getting involved in food?
Falling upward. Accidents.
It's called, there's a word that I explain that when we did, it's called stumble.
Yeah.
Stumble.
We stumbled upon
anything.
Which could
be the name of your second podcast.
It could.
Yes.
Because, you know, we...
The Robicelli's Stumble.
Yeah.
It's a dance move.
It's a dance move.
Hey, kids.
And a way of life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, again, because we got sick or, like, bad things happen so early, like, you know, that phrase, you know, you make plans and God laughs. And it's totally true. And, again, with that in my ADD, like, I don't see things ever linearly. Is that a word? Linearly?
I think so.
Sure. But I kind of see things in, like, spider webs and, like, potential situations and what could happen. So it's a lot about learning how to react and think on your feet. Like, you know, everything could be going great. And then suddenly you get smacked across the face with some horrible shit. And you don't have time to sit there and reevaluate.
Right.
So I hated working in fine dining. I worked in fine dining for a very short time. And the idea of, like, I am busting my ass and fighting with people to work 12 hours a day.
For $12 an hour.
For not $12 an hour, man. I mean, when I broke down the hours, when you break down all the overtime, I was making like $7.
Right.
And I'm like, and I'm doing this to feed rich people. And I'm like, and that is bullshit to me. That's total bullshit. Like, you know, it's great that you can, you know, mince your onion super small and you have great discipline, but you're poor because you want to cook for rich people. And I couldn't stand that. And I grew up in New York, so I have a very low douchebag tolerance. I didn't think I was going to fall in love at 24. I didn't think I'd be married at 25 or a mom at 26. And we knew that we wanted to do something kind of normal. So we're like, okay, so let's push ourselves career-wise more into catering and gourmet and, you know, like sourcing food and opening up a cheese shop. So we had planned to do that, and we opened up Robicelli's Gourmet Market. Toby was 6 weeks old when we opened, and Atticus was 18 months old. 2 days before the opening, one of my best friends of 20 years committed suicide. We opened Friday. Friday was great. Monday was the stock market crash of 2008. 3 weeks later, Atticus, 18 months old, gets a lung infection, ends up in the pediatric ICU for 3 weeks in October. We're struggling because our business plan is worthless because of the stock market crash. Then right before
December,
Christmas,
my mom gets hit by a car, left for dead, has massive brain surgery.
Jesus Christ, this is like Queen for a Day.
This was 4 months. But you kind of just learn how to react. And we sit there, you know, the next spring, and I'm trying to figure out how we save this business because we were supposed to be mostly doing cheese, catering, and sandwiches.
In Brooklyn,
but a lot of the contacts that we had were at Lehman Brothers. They were at Bear Stearns, corporate catering, all the stuff we had set up out the window. Everyone in our neighborhood, people are losing their jobs left and right. It's a big civil service neighborhood, and they cut all the overtime for civil service people. And it was just shitty. And we're drowning. Just everything in the world is going wrong. And I'm like, what the hell do we do? Our previous jobs were in pastry and in cakes and stuff. And I was like, well, let's make cakes. And he's like, who's going to go buy all these cakes every day? And we didn't have the equipment. We had like a little KitchenAid. And I was like, listen, let's make cupcakes. We'll tell all the people who liked our cakes that they're available in cupcake form. So they'll come in for a bite, but then they'll order sandwiches and all that stuff. Didn't think that was the thing that's going to take off. And suddenly it explodes. So we're like, okay, so let's just adapt.
We're the cupcake couple.
Yeah, we were. So
we don't even
we
like
had,
cupcakes.
We didn't like cupcakes. And we had,
still don't.
So we had these things. We decided to market it as competition between me and her, and you know, we made these things called battle boxes, and
they had
like one flavor each of us would make, and then we'd have the community vote.
I forgot about this.
So we did this for a couple weeks till people are like, we really don't want to vote anymore. Can we just have the cupcakes?
Yeah, we just thought it was a gimmick, and we're like, okay, so let's just keep making that, and then we're making the pastries, and that's going well.
And
but
this is with 1 6-quart KitchenAid,
and
started doing thousands of cupcakes with a 6-quart KitchenAid.
So I would be home during the day taking care of the babies because remember, I've got 2 kids under 2 years old. Then he would come home. I'd go in the kitchen. I'd be there till like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning with the single mixer. And while this is happening, like, yeah, cupcakes are great, but I've got all this debt and equipment upstairs and staff and everything for a totally different type of store. And we couldn't make it work. And like eventually we just were like, this all fell apart. We can't keep doing this. We're going to get a divorce. We're miserable. We're lousy. And we're like, well, let's just evolve. I'm like, we have all this press for the cupcakes. And we had this idea. We're like, okay, you're going to go back to work and I will keep baking. And we're going to move forward with this with some other people. And I remember Matt actually had a job interview.
I wanted a job interview to go work for a company.
It was a Doe Fund. Yeah.
And the woman who was giving me my interview, says, well, I'm not going to give you the job. I was like, why? She's like, well, you make the best cupcakes I've ever had, and that's what you need to be doing with your life.
I was like, no.
And I was like, no, I really would like a paycheck. I'd like to pay my bills and have a home.
I mean, we were just hustling. We relaunched the business with like $30. We had in quarters in a piggy bank and went to Costco, and we were baking in the back of my friend's bar, and we were driving around in my 2000 Honda Civic with the babies in the back, and just kind of making it happen. And it was like, okay, well, we're gonna survive now in this post-apocalyptic, post-economic apocalyptic thing. And, you know, you just think on your feet.
Yeah.
You just adapt.
And it lasted a few years, right?
Oh, quite a number of years. That was, we left Brooklyn when? We moved on my 36th birthday. And we had a bakery in Brooklyn. We had one downtown. We were wholesaling. We were doing all this stuff. And we were just really tired. Like, we wanted a business partner, and we never found one. And it's just the two of us. Like, something people always forget about Robicelli's, like, you'll think of, like Momofuku Milk Bar or Dominique Ancel or something
right.
like that. They've got investors. They've got partners. They've got people, like, running all sorts of shows and people, like, hands. We had us. That was
right.
it. It was us.
And you wrote a book?
Yes, mm-hmm. Books.
Well, two.
I'm writing.
Three, almost three
and
now.
I just had a meeting about another one.
Four, right actually. No, because the WWE cookbook comes out next week.
This week or something.
And you didn't have enough to do.
No.
Right? You needed more things to do.
You just find ways to survive. And we're like, we were so tired. And we were so done with New York. You're so tired of working all the time to barely get by on your own. I'm like, I'm in my 30s and everyone thinks I'm successful. Where's my car? Where's my hot tub? Where's my fur coats? Why am I working all these hours and just being exhausted? And it was just like 1,000 different cuts. And finally, we're like, we need to leave New York.
So it wasn't that the business was failing, is that your lives, you felt like your lives were failing.
Yeah. God.
We weren't happy at all.
I was so unhappy.
Yeah.
I honestly, I hated her so much at a certain couple points.
I mean, listen, when you're...
Well, you know, it's like, it was never, it was always work, work, work. And it was never, listen, I got shit going on. I'm sorry, am I allowed to curse on this?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, I got stuff
going. It was
going
to happen.
Yeah,
so.
I held it back as long as I could.
I didn't.
Oh.
I've been cursing for like 20 minutes. You just don't notice because it happens all the time.
Good.
But, yeah, I was just so unhappy. And I was like, you know, she's not my wife anymore. She's not even my roommate. She's like this business partner of a business that is eating us alive that I just despise her. And I didn't want that ever to happen because I loved her so much.
And we don't like, you know, the thing is when you really love somebody, you can love them with your whole heart and your being, but you could also hate them that much.
Yeah.
And we didn't love the bakery. We didn't love doing what we did. I didn't want to go to work. And I was like, you kind of wake up, you're like, why the fuck am I doing this? Like, why? And I think it was just, like, there were a billion reasons in the press, and it was all a billion reasons. You can't say, like, oh, this was the one thing that made it happen.
Right.
There were, like, problems with Con Ed. There was problems with, you know, customers or supply chains and this and that, and like, health reasons. And the final thing that really convinced me to do it was... You know, you think about what happened in New York and you think the promise that, you know, again, this is our hometown and the
right.
promise your hometown gives you. And suddenly your hometown, you know, you can't afford to live there. My whole generation just got screwed. None of us can buy houses. And our parents, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, they all had houses. We can't stay near our families. And I think about looking at my kids and I'm sending them to school and they're saying, you could be whatever you want when you grow up.
As long as it's a hedge fund guy
that
works 90,000 hours a week.
How is a kid supposed to dream in New York City?
Yeah.
How is a kid supposed to look and see their parents working 18 hours a day and not making it? What happens to them? And, you know, we grew up in New York City that made us survivors, that made us adaptable, that made us dream and think big and think differently because you could do anything. And that has been dead for a while here.
Yeah.
It is gone.
So, I mean, wow, this is this has been fascinating. We haven't even gotten to your move to Baltimore.
We live in Baltimore now?
Yeah, you guys
live in
Baltimore.
I was there this morning.
Yeah, which is, you know.
I left the stove on.
pretty weird considering what New York food culture icons you became.
It's still weird to me.
And you opened Robicelli Studios in Baltimore. So this is a wrap for this episode of Special Sauce.
No kidding. Really?
No, but we're going to continue to yap.
Oh, okay.
Because I love yapping with you guys.
I like it too.
And we are all such proficient yappers. Thank you, Allison and Matt, for this initial stage of yapping. And for agreeing to stick around.
Yeah.
So
he almost said stripper.
Stripper? I like strippers.
Yeah, they're coming in.
You take off your pants. No. Show everybody that shape.
So, you know, before we leave your time in New York, what was the name of the first cookbook?
Robicelli's A Love Story with Cupcakes. It was a cookbook / memoir. And a lot of people didn't realize it was a memoir. But yeah, I loved that book. It's really funny. It uses the F word 137 times, which is a record for a cupcake book.
I used to love that. My favorite review of that cookbook was a woman who went to the local library to take it out. She didn't even buy it, but she reviewed it on Amazon. And the profanity and filth that was in that book.
There was somebody who called me vulgar and totally inappropriate, and then I made that my business card. I was like, Allison Robicelli, vulgar and totally inappropriate. That was like that for like 2 years.
That's it's like everyone awesome. In the 90s who had Mac Daddy business cards.
All right. Well, all right. We're going to have to close this episode, but I thank you both for this, which has been amazing, and we're going to just keep going for episode 2 with the Robicellis. So... Allison and Matt Robicelli, thank you again, and we'll see you next time, Serious Eaters.